Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Enthusiasticast. I'm John, he's Mark, and each week we recommend an awesome book. This week I'm going to be talking about Agnes and the Hitman by Jennifer Cruzy and Bob Mayer. But before we get to that, Mark, I wanted to ask you about your relationship with classic books, or at the very least, non-contemporary books. So recently a buddy of mine browbeat me into completing a Facebook survey so that we could compare the size of our libraries. It was one of those ones, how many of these 100 great books have you read? I did pretty well on the modern classics, but bad education and my antipathy towards anything that happened before I was born led to an abysmal score on the actual classics portion. So in general, it takes Earth, Wind, and Fire to move me to read a non-contemporary book, and the gut reaction to that is that it's a bad thing. But is that true? So what's your own relationship to books of a certain age?
He galled you into taking a Facebook survey? Oh, he was like, how big is yours, Buffo?
He's just like, put it on the day. No, he's just like, he pestered me, you know. And it was because I'm like, you know, I'm the guy who should have read all the books, right? So I think he expected that I would have read way more than him. But then he could be like, oh, well, I've read, you know, nearly as much as John. But of course, he blew right by me because for all that I read, it's like, you know, it's a very shallow, calorie light diet of books.
And did he know that? Like, was he?
No.
Was he trying to?
Oh, he's all fucking puffed up afterwards. I'm just like, you're such a nerd.
Well, I'm not afraid of old books. Let's just say that. So,
right.
You know, I totally didn't appreciate at first that you don't actually read anything older than you. Like, that wasn't a lie. Like, you're that way with movies too. It's hilarious.
That's 1973, man. That's when the universe began.
Dude, man. So the one good thing about that, though, is that you're getting older. So the amount of books, like the 100,000 books that enter publication every year, the pool is getting infinitely larger, my friend.
Eventually, the books of my youth will be literary classics.
So I guess there's two things about this, right? So I think I've said this before on the show. I've read a fairly wide sample of kind of the Western canon for school.
Right.
And so that means at like no point ever in the future will I ever feel guilty about not having read something, right? So you come across these people occasionally who are like, you haven't read Thomas Hardy, you know? And I'm just like, no, I haven't. Fuck you for being a snob about it, right? Like, I hate those people. And so I'm totally okay with, like, my station in, like, reading experience. There's just, you know, anyway. So the second thing, I guess, is just recently I was hanging out with a bunch of guys, actually, who are, like, young, professional, smart cats, and they have a book club, I guess. And so their struggle as a group was that some of the members wanted to kind of go through that 100 great book list and kind of plug the holes, right? And they tried that for a bit. But what they found was that, like, reading Dostoevsky or Marquez kind of killed conversation for them. They were all like, yep, great book. And then there was, like, no controversy in their picks whatsoever, right?
Right.
So the older the book, the lighter the debate. And they were like, you know, let's go last 10 years. And I'm like, last 10 years? Like, why last 10 years? But I got to tell you, like, I get that at a certain level, right? So in preparing for this show, it's tough to get psyched about older books. There's just something like heavier about them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and is it even important, right? Like, unless your job requires you, you know, if you were a literary critic, for instance, you know, unless your job requires you to have a, you know, really extensive knowledge of the canon of Western or English literature, if that doesn't appeal to you, then, you know, why should you do that, right? If the thought of diving into that is like, oh my God, what a chore. Who are you trying to impress? You know, and if you've got people who you feel the need to impress in that way, you might want to reconsider the people, you know, not the books. Which isn't to say that I don't think that people should read these books or that there's anything to be gained from them. And I sell myself short. It's like, you know, I've read Homer, I've read Shakespeare, I've read Ezra Pound. I've read all of this stuff. You know, I've read a fair bit, but you know, by the same token, if I'm not excited to do it, I'm not gonna, you know, force myself to do it out of some, you know, misguided sense that I'm just not a complete human being unless I've read these things. On the other hand, I would say though that based on the experience that I have had reading older books, it's kind of a lot like exercise. Like if you're in a really unhealthy place, then the thought of getting in shape just seems really odious. You've got a lot of inertia to overcome in order to get going. But usually once you get going, you find that it's not as bad as you thought it was. And in fact, you actually kind of enjoy it. And that's pretty much my experience with classics that I've read. You know, when I have got the impetus up to pick up a classic and got into it, I find myself thinking, geez, I don't know what I was worried about or why I thought this was going to be boring, because this is like, this is a great book for a reason. It's a rock and read. I'm totally having a good time, you know? So
what does that normally take? Like, what does it take to go there, right? Like, if I told you, like, right the second that you must go and read X, like...
Pretty much something like that, yeah. If you give me a personal recommendation to go and read X, then... I'm probably gonna pick it up. The social pressure or the academic pressure to read these things has no impact on me whatsoever, and I can't be bothered with the guilt.
Right. So speaking of like classics of Western canon, dude, what the hell? You're gonna be enthusiastic about a romance novel? Like,
I'm totally gonna be enthusiastic. I'm gonna be enthusiastic about two romance novels.
What the hell is this?
Well, let me tell you, let me back it up here, okay? So the books that I'm going to be enthusiastic about, I mentioned one up the top of the show, Agnes and the Hitman, which is by Cruzy and Bob Mayer. And then the other book is Tell Me Lies, which is just Cruzy, and it's an older book of hers. And so it's like a whole combination of factors that led me to read these books. Never read a romance novel before in my life. And so one of the things is... I think it started back in the fall with the whole Franzenfreude thing, where I've just really become hyper aware of the gender of the authors that I'm reading, how many men I'm reading, how many women I'm reading. And the Franzenfreude thing, for anybody who missed it, was when Jennifer Weiner and Jodi Picoult, who are two huge best-selling female authors, kind of called out the New York Times for being biased towards men in their reviews, and the spark was like two back-to-back ultra-glowing reviews of Jonathan Franzen. And so it became dubbed Franzenfreude. And so that got me thinking. And then Vita, which is a web organization, I think, did sort of a survey of all of the review publications, or like a huge representative sample of like review publications in North America, looking at how many female reviewers they had on staff and how many reviews they did of books by female authors. And it pretty much, the Franzenfreude thing was very much just like a litmus, just like there, here's this one example. But then the Vita thing said, no, that's actually the reality, right? When, female reviewers, female authors, female books are being completely marginalized. So I've just become, you know, those articles seem to be popping up a lot. And so I'm hyper aware of that. And then, you know, in terms of the show is responsible for so much. And I was looking at the books that I'd been recommending, and I just want to, you know, I want to keep it fresh. I don't want to be reviewing, recommending versions of the same book over and over and over and over again, right? You know, where people tune in and it's like, oh, here's John, and he's recommending another, you know, science fiction / crime novel or what have you. So I'm always trying to like look at different books. And so I was looking for holes, looking for types of books that I hadn't recommended before. And of course, whew, romance is like a huge gaping hole. I've kind of skirted around it, you know. One Day by Nickel, it's definitely a romance, but it's very much in the Nick Hornby / Jonathan Tropper camp of lad lit. Like calling One Day a genre romance is like calling Inception a love story. You know, it's like, yeah, it's there, but it's not really what it is. So it's not a genre romance. And then, completely separate from all of this, I was reading a magazine review of the movie came out about 6 weeks ago. I think it's called No Strings Attached. It's the Natalie Portman, Ashton Kutcher one where they're having like sex without consequences. And it was like a semi-positive review of the movie. You know, it's like, oh, it's a good date movie, whatever. And then there was a sidebar where the reviewer basically said, here's, you know, three other romantic comedies that I like. And it was Fools Rush In and You've Got Mail and Love Actually. And I just, I completely lost my shit because Love Actually is like in the pantheon of movies for me, right? I watch that movie like without fail every Christmas. I love that movie. And to lump it in with movies that I'm less enamored of, like Fools Rush In and You've Got Mail, I was, you know, I was foaming, which is kind of ridiculous, but it made me think. I'm like, I'm a huge romance fan, you know, like I just got to own this. I'm a huge romance fan. And yet I've never read a romance novel. And the only reason I could think of that I've never read a romance novel is straight up sexism. You know, there's all these women who are writing and reading and loving these, you know, so-called male genres like crime, fantasy, and science fiction. And yet, you know, a so-called female genre like romance, like I won't even cross that aisle because I don't have, you know, I can't hide behind my wife and go, oh, well, you know, she likes this sort of thing. Right. If I'm reading a romance novel, it's because I want to read a romance novel.
You can hide behind your e-reader, though.
True. But it's
so just, wait a second. How did you go from like there to here? Like, how did that happen?
Well, so I'm just like, okay, you know what? I got to own that shit. You know, life's too short for me to like, this is probably a genre that I'm going to dig on, you know? And it's just like, it's stupid hangups that are keeping me out. So got a coworker who I know reads romance novels, but she also reads a lot of other stuff. And we've talked about books. And so I know our tastes are, you know, kind of in line. Like we have a lot of the same favorite books. So I just went to her and I said, like, what is the good shit? Like, hook me up. And so she gave me Jennifer Cruzy.
No way. Yeah,
it was like classic. She comes in with this book. And it's like, I don't know when it was from. It was like the 90s. It had it just screamed the 90s. It was like a thick little yellowing airplane paperback. The cover's faded. I think it used to be red type, but now it's pink. And it's got like a convertible on the cover with a woman's legs hanging out of the back wearing high heels. I was just like, I'm fucking in for a penny, man.
This was Tell No Lies, right?
It's Tell No Lies, yeah.
Yes. I remember that cover.
It is the distilled essence of what I think of, right? When I think of a romance novel, it could have had Fabio on the cover and it wouldn't have been, that's an old reference, but it could, you know, and it wouldn't have been any more classic. So I was like, okay, yeah, this is what I asked for. So let's see what we're seeing about, right? And so,
oh, dude, man, that is like, that's brave. That's like a 400 pager too. That's thick.
It's a quick read, you know.
Well,
there's not a lot of subtext.
Okay.
There's not a lot of subtext to it, right? It's all plot. So I read that one and I really dug it, but I just, you know, I wanted to have a little bit of the breadth. And there was this other series of books that she does with this guy, Bob Mayer, and the conceit is that like there'll be a man and a woman, and she'll write the female part, and he'll write the male part. And but it's not like a he said she said kind of thing. It's just one story, and when it's focusing on, you know, the female character, it's her, and when it's the male character, it's him. And so this one, Agnes and the Hitman, the female character is kind of like a classic romance heroine. The hitman character, Shane, is like a proper hitman. Like, this is a guy that could come out of, you know, in a lot of ways, come out of like a Mac Bolan novel or whatever, right? Like, he knows about guns and he's a badass motherfucker and he goes around, he kills people. And like, the hitman character is one of my favorite genre characters going. I don't know why, but I love hitman. I just think, like, you know, the field for stories is just really, really rich there. So I really wanted to, after reading Tell Me Lies and really enjoying it, I really wanted to read that book. So I polished that off, and I got to tell you, man, these
books. And here we are.
Here we are. These books are a great amount of fun, and there was a bunch of interesting things about these books. So, first
okay,
of all,
so just give me date ranges here before we start.
What's that?
Uh, When was Agnes and the Hitman pubbed?
That is recent. That is like in the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
And the other one is older. It's from like the late 90s.
Yeah. All right.
So it's like about 15 years old. I don't know the exact publication dates, but it's something like that. So, I've learned all of this stuff. Jennifer Cruzy, I guess she was a PhD candidate, and she was going to write her thesis on, what was it here? I have it here. The Impact of Gender on Narrative Strategies. And so her deal was she was going to read 200 romance novels and 200 men's adventure novels and then look at the differences, right? But she loved the romance novels so much that she decided to change her thesis and start writing romance novels. And that's like how she got into the business. And then I learned that there's like a minor and a major leagues of romance novels. So there's category romances, which are like these short romance novels that focus on one man and one woman or one relationship. And they have like a shelf life of a month before the next one in the series. So they're usually in some kind of series, like a sub imprint of Harlequin or something like that. If anybody's listening to this and they're a real romance reader, I apologize if I get shit wrong. I've said it. I'm a total noob. So, and then there's what they call single title romances, which is like the big leagues, right? If you're a single title romance writer, it's a longer book. It's more complicated. You might get a hardcover release. So these two would fall. These two are single title romances, if that means anything to anyone. So the deal with, I think Tell Me Lies is the more classic romance of the two, because it's mostly about the female lead. And the deal is, like, she goes out to clean her husband's car. She's a teacher, so she's off for the summer. She's looking after the kid. She goes out to clean her husband's car, finds a pair of panties that are not hers. And so, it starts off in the classic, like, her man's been cheating. She's going to leave him. But then it turns into, like, fraud, and there's murder, and an old flame shows up, and there's soap opera and family drama. And it's really kind of compelling. One of the things that I wasn't expecting, I don't know why, but I kind of figured that these books would be, I want to say a little bit more feminist, I think is the right term. So it's basically, they have far more traditional, they hew far closer to traditional gender roles than I would have thought. And basically what it comes down to is that the gender roles are like traditional plus. So to use Agnes and the Hitman as an example, because it's the probably the more clear example, Agnes is a really traditional woman. She's a food writer. She's throwing a wedding for her best friend's daughter. And the two things she wants in life are lots of people to cook for and a man she can trust. And Shane is a hitman, and he's like square jawed and strong and capable. And so far, so stereotyped for both of them. But then, you know, Agnes's plus is that when like all of this hitman crap comes into her life, she's totally level about the whole thing. Like, she's got like a minor freak out, and then she's fine morally, emotionally, physically. She's just like, you know, down for the ride. And then Shane, the hitman, is also thoughtful enough to like pick up wedding supplies on his way back from a hit. So, you know, they're not stereotypes, but they're 90% stereotypes with like a tiny little, like, you know, iceberg peak of meat in the middle.
Okay. And, but like, you know, the Grace Kelly from Rear Window, Hitchcock's Rear Window, right? Whatever, Lisa Fremont or whatever she plays, right? Like, is she like the sexy librarian with the twist? Or is it more straight arrow than that?
Well, you're referencing a movie that was made before I was born, so... so already I'm at sea. But, so... I wouldn't even say it's a twist. It's not like it takes the stereotype and then it subverts it. You know, it is kind of the stereotype, but then it, you know, it rounds it out a little bit more to kind of enhance the fantasy scenario in both of these things. So it's kind of reading the books, it was kind of like a friend of mine went to Australia, and he said one of the weird things about being in Australia was watching the news, and they've got the map of the world behind the newscaster, but instead of North America being in the center of the map, Australia is in the center of the map. So it's the same, all the same land masses, but looked at from a slightly different perspective. And so that's kind of what these books were for me, because like there's crime and there's murder and there's all of the things that are in most of the books that I read. And yet it's all looked at from a slightly different perspective, which I don't know if that charm was going to, it will wear off after I've read 15 or 50 of these books. But in this particular instance, and I think because Cruzy is a strong writer, I found it really, really, really interesting.
You're freaking killing me. Okay. So the film spotting marathon on Screwball Comedies.
Okay.
Did you ever listen to that?
Oh, that's, what? I stopped listening to that years ago, but I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I did, yeah.
So those movies are definitely made like they were made in the 20s, right? But they feature like one female lead, one male lead, and they're kind of, well, they're goofy, right? And so they natter at each other, and it's kind of comic. Is that what this is?
No.
Or is this like straight ahead?
There's a little bit of repartee, but no, it's not quite like that. There's much more of the interior life going on in these books. Yeah. And it's all stuff that is perfectly valid and reasonable and yet is different than what I'm used to. And it's because, you know, apparently I'm quite sheltered in my reading, you know, but the one character is, you know, being framed, the one woman is being framed for murder in Tell Me Lies. And her concern is, you know, totally about her daughter and how this is going to affect her daughter. But the way that she reacts to that is completely different than the way a male hero would react or a male protagonist would react in the same type of, you know, if it's a genre piece with a male protagonist and that's the setup that he's being framed for murder, he's going to go out and deal with it in a completely different way than she deals with it, right? And because it's playing into, I think, a different kind of fantasy experience, a different kind of vicarious experience. That was the other thing that really surprised me about these books. So there was an article in Esquire just recently by Benjamin Alsop, and he was bemoaning the state of sex in American fiction. And he was looking just at male writers, and he was talking, you know, he's talking about like the you know, the great men of letters from the 60s and how, you know, their sex scenes weren't that good, but they really got their freak on. And then how today's male writers just kind of either ignore sex altogether, or they write about it in a really neurotic way, or they play it for ironic laughs. Like they really, like there's not a lot of like good sex in North American literary fiction written by men. It is apparently all in the romance novels. Like, if I could forget Kristen Schaal and Richard Blomquist, these are the sexy books of sexy sex. Like, it may be softcore, not hardcore, but it's definitely porn. Like, I was blown away by, like, the amount and detail of sex that there are in these books. And it's really well written. Like, I'm used to these, like, crap, you know, neurotic male writers writing about sex where you're just like, oh man, this is painful and embarrassing. Not this sex. This is like, wow, this is great sex and great writing about sex. And I can't believe that, you know, this has been going on all this time. And I had no idea. I wish this shit would migrate into some of the other books I read. I'm like, this is a good ingredient. This is like icing. Like, yeah.
Okay, so wait a second. Like, instead of being really enthusiastic, you're just kind of like shell-shocked, it sounds like. You've like knocked down two of these books and you're like, holy crap.
I can't
get my bearings. I don't know what's going on.
It wasn't what I expected at all. Agnes and the Hitman, so it's got all of this, right? It's like, it's, you know, kind of funny. You know, it's got some good lines in it. It's got a good plot. It's got all this sex. And the dude's running around with like a semi-automatic machine gun, like gunning people down. I'm just like, how did all this get together?
Oh my goodness.
Nobody,
But I may have lost you permanently. So this is like a whole series, right? Well, other than romance novels being the most addictive thing ever, the Agnes and the Hitman
no,
books are a series.
it's just a one-off. They've done, I think, three books together, but it's all different characters in all of the books.
Oh, I see.
So it's just a done in one, which is fine. I don't know that I'd necessarily, you know, I'm not really a big like book series reader guy. I find it wears thin after two or three. Doesn't matter how good the first one was. But if there's more like this, I'm so down. Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. So Harlequin, of course, is local, right? And they, well, I guess they service kind of drugstore racks across North America, but when you go into like some of the more off the beaten path kind of like non-traditional book retailers, you'll find a rack of books there that are all supplied by Harlequin, right? So you have MacBolin and the A-Team, and then you have like the Desire series and the Puritan series. And in between those two extremes, there's like the woman spy novels, which are like the female characters, but with the trappings of an adventure novel. I don't know if you've seen those or not.
No, but I can picture what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. And like, I don't imagine they're popular. I imagine that there's probably like four or five writers in that series that service that genre. But you see them in the spinner racks when you go and look, right? And the interesting thing is, now that we've had the ebook re revolution and all these books have migrated online, when you look on like Kobo or Barnes and Noble for the Nook or whatever, like genre lines, all you have to do, all like you have no further context other than the cover to judge what the book's about.
Right.
So it's happened, like you come across kind of these crossover genre books, and it's like, oh, you know, that catches your eye and you stop on it when you're browsing the internet or whatever, and it's just like, I don't know where this, like, I don't know what angle this book is, where this is coming from, right?
Yes.
And it's confusing, and I'm just like, wait a second, and then I have to like look at the detail and be like, oh, okay, this is a Harlequin book, right? And vice versa. It's just like with certain like sci-fi books and certain you're like the design language of the genre only takes you so far.
And it's getting kind of muddled, and you can't figure out like what is the dominant ingredient here.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I like that happens to me more and more these days, and it's just like it's just a matter of time before I buy one of these books by accident and like get something that I'm totally unexpected and just be like, whoa, what happened? You know what I mean?
It's, I didn't think there was that many surprises left. I really didn't. I think, I thought I knew what this was going to be, and it was just an experiment, and I was just like, holy crap. Now, it could be that I've just stumbled into the cream. I mean, I got these on a recommendation from a very intelligent literary woman, so I doubt that this is what it's all like, but I'll take more like this. They publish so many of these. Even if only a tiny fraction are this good, that's still more books than I can read in my life.
Oh man, you are killing me. You're killing me. We have to, you know who we should ask on the show? We should get Sarah Wendell from Trashy Books, Smart Bitches or whatever. I don't know
Yeah,
if you know her.
she can recommend me books.
She is awesome. We should totally have her on the show to recommend stuff, and then you guys can like team up. It will be awesome. So I don't know. Like there's so many places to go with this. Like, you think maybe that we should wrap it up there? Like, do you think
Let's
we're
no,
done?
let's end it here. Maybe we'll follow up on the blog.
Amazing. Okay, so we maintain a blog at enthusiasticast.com. Please stop by there and leave us some feedback about this or any other episode that you possibly might want to dip into after getting this far anyway. We've connected with a few listeners, actually, repeatedly. So, like, the Gen Twists of the world that are out there that have commented repeated times. Just amazing. We love that. We think it's awesome. So, so if you want, stop by, say hi, or reach out to us via email. We're at hello@enthusiasticast.com. That's just a little more private way of saying cheers. I don't know. So that should about do it. Until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm John.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers. Well, it's because I had this preconception about what it was going to be, right? Like, I figured it was going to be like Twilight-y crap, you know?
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
You know, but I'm just like, no, like the writing is better and it's grown-ups and they're fucking a lot. And, you know, it's like the anti-Twilight. Like, instead of dancing around it, it's like end of chapter 2. Bang.